Welcome to the latest edition of the Teach Me How Northern Affinity podcast. Firstly, I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Helena today. So thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
What we are going to talk about today is, and I have to say this slowly to make sure I get it right, the lusciousness of language. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation because this feels like it's going to be a really interesting one. But before we get into that, Helena, do you just want to kind of just tell us a little bit about you and just explain what you do, and then we'll kind of go into a bit more detail on the conversation.
Certainly. So I'm Helena Jaroszewska. You get points if you can actually both pronounce and spell my surname, so that's cool. And amazingly, in, I think it's about 3 weeks before the end of October, I will have been here up north in York for 2 years, which is, it just feels I've been here forever. So I work internationally, and people often say, well, what do you actually do? And I say, well, I work in a compassionately ruthless way with leaders and teams. And they often say, well, what does that mean? I say, well, exactly what it says. Leaders and teams come to me because they want to do something different. They want to change how they work. They want to get better results. They want to develop themselves and their teams. And that's where I step in. And I've also got a reputation in York, which I had when I was in Bristol. And John Lane from Your Wealth describes it as a mic, not Mike from Michael Edwards of Northern Affinity, but an MIC, mic dropping questions. And that's partly where the lusciousness of language comes in, because my job with the leaders and teams isn't to do the work for them, nor to have a nice conversation. It's to ask those jaw-dropping questions, those mic-dropping questions that make them stop and think. And that's what I do, and I love it. I do various other things, pro bono things, and I've got a side hustle as well, which is interesting. But my main thing is working with leaders and teams to help them be better at what they do.
I think that's a perfect explanation, Helena. And got to be careful of my questions then. You're the expert on this, so I might get told off for asking bad questions, but anyway, I'll go for it anyway. Yeah. Probably a good place to start is, what do we mean? What do you mean by lusciousness of language? Go on, explain that to me.
Well, several years ago, I was invited to do a workshop for the London Business Library. And I called it, Language is Never Innocent. And that, I guess, is where I think the lusciousness of language is. So we use words all the time. I probably would bet lots on it that we don't think about the words that we use. And so I was working with a new client yesterday, a director of a not-for-profit. And I thought, okay, I'll let it go for a bit. And it was the third time I heard her say, I'm quite good at this. And I went, stop. The word quite gives a very interesting impression to the person that is listening. I'm quite good at this means I'm not really sure. I don't think I'm that good at it. And it's not a word that we need. And that for me was where the lusciousness of language comes in. Because if we can get rid of those words that don't actually mean anything and at the same time detract from the amazingness that all of us are, then language is certainly absolutely luscious because we can use it to influence. We can use it to change people's perceptions. We can use it to do the same thing in a different way.
Is it fair to say then it's probably quite, in most cases, anyway, quite Pardon? Subtle?
Pardon? You yeah, used the word quite.
Right. I knew I'd get told off at some point during this conversation.
Well, the thing is, Words like quite and just and merely and only are like wallpaper. We don't hear them. We don't see them even. And it's being conscious of every single word that we use. It needs to have a brilliant meaning. It needs to be used really carefully. That's not to say get hung up on everything that you say. However, it is around being conscious of the words that you use.
And strangely enough, when you said the word just then, that was the one that, when you started explaining then, the word just was the one that came to mind for me that I hear people use a lot. And then often to do, you know, obviously doing what I do, you go to events and things like that. How many times I've heard someone say, oh, I am just a mortgage advisor. I don't know, first thing that came to my head. Or I'm just a this, or I just do that. And it's, you know, they probably don't even realize they've said it. I think I would expect that most people don't expect. And so it is subtle, I guess, on the whole.
And I sense sometimes it's particularly for women. It's a defense mechanism. It's a way of going, and yes, chaps do say I'm just an accountant or I'm just a whatever. It's going, if I say I'm a lawyer or I'm an accountant, I'm actually putting myself forward. If I go I'm only or I'm just, it means I'm not actually being 100% confident in who I am and what I'm doing. So you can't actually attack me.
Yeah.
Now, with those four letters, who would know that that's what comes up?
No, it's been interesting, obviously, that you mentioned there the male-female differences. Is there any other you think that, I know we're generalising here, and like you quite rightly said, some people, males, will also say, I'm just an accountant.
Yeah.
Do you think that is quite common, that the sexes are often different?
In a broad brushstroke, probably. There's been a reasonable amount of research about how women find it difficult to ask for a pay increase.
Yeah.
Especially when they know that a male colleague is being paid more than them for the same job. It, again, a reasonable amount of research has been done that if there's a job advertised and a man thinks, well, I can probably do about 60% of that, no question, he'll apply. For a woman who thinks, I can do 98% of that, oh, I probably won't go for it. And it's something around how can not just women, but how can everybody be more confident in what they do? And part of that, and there's a brilliant book actually, part of that is the language, that luscious language that we use. And there's a book, you don't need to read it, you just need to remember the title. Absolutely amazing name for the author. So it's a guy called Shad Helmstetter. I mean, what a name. And he's written a book, excuse me, called What to Say When You Talk to Yourself. Okay. And here is where the lusciousness of language really needs to get embedded. Because how we talk to ourselves actually dictates the results that we get out there. And I often say to people, how we are in our bodies, and I'll underline this because the word is really important, how we are in our bodies, in other words, how we feel, our health, what we eat, how we look after our bodies, all that sort of stuff, dictates what we think. And I'm going to underline the dictate. How we think dictates what we say. And what we say, the words we use, the luscious language that we use, dictates the results that we get out there. If we don't like the results we're getting out there, guess what? instead of pointing a finger, because there's always three coming back at you, instead of pointing a finger and saying to a team or colleague or someone that you're wanting to sell something to, you change. It's coming back here, changing how we think to change what we say to get the results that we want.
That makes sense. And so kind of, I guess, going to the practicalities of that, if I said, right, I need to improve, I need to get better at this, or I want to get a pay rise at work, so I need to use better language, or whatever the circumstance for anyone is, what kind of things can we all do to make this stuff? Because no one's perfect and we're not going to get it right all the time, but maybe there's some simple things that we can all do to at least start the ball rolling.
Okay. I think it's, I'm almost sure. So it's getting into a positive mindset, having a severe talking to oneself, I think, and encouraging oneself to get over ourselves, because we're often the biggest obstacle. So, for example, if it was to get a pay rise or talk to someone that you really, that's from a business point of view, but maybe if you're an entrepreneur, finding someone that you want to talk to at a networking event, rather than thinking, oh, it's not going to come off, they're not going to want to talk to me, it's finding, and this is where those amazing questions come in, it's finding a way to ask a question that makes you stand out. So, for example, if you're going in for a pay rise, it's maybe, so you don't want to ask why, despite Simon Sinek saying that why is really important, it isn't in this instance. Instead of saying, why aren't you giving me a pay rise that is commensurate with my colleague who's doing exactly the same thing and he's a man, whatever, or a woman, doesn't matter, but usually it's a man. Rather than saying why, because that's very confrontational, and the person will go, well, because we are. Maybe asking a question, what do I need to do in order to be considered for the next step up, therefore the next pay rise? How, and so what and how are great beginnings to questions, and also you can pop them into the middle of a sentence so they don't always have to be that obvious, which is very good. And it may be, how do I need to look at my professional development to find out what are the next steps? So it's getting information. And the other great thing, I was challenged by one of my coaches at some point to ask questions of no more than three words. And I went, you're joking. And that could be a question. You're joking, flipping the end of the word up, and becomes a question. Really? Becomes a question. So you can, and by keeping your questions short, you actually give the person time to think and really answer the question that you've asked, rather than asking a really long question by which time the person has forgotten actually what you started off with. So sometimes I'll say, well, to clients, okay, yeah, three words is good. Five words, absolute maximum. But see how many times you can ask a question of three words or less. But always ask questions that will get you information. One last thing, because I think you've got maybe a question that's popping. If you're a solopreneur or an entrepreneur at a networking event and you go up to someone and say hi, the last thing you need to do is to say what you do. You might say your name, and it's really good to actually, and this is where the lusciousness of language comes in. I call it the James Bond effect. So James Bond would always go, I'm Bond, James Bond. So if you translate that, I would go, Halina Yaroshevska. because I've got an unusual name. So if I say my first name, then say my first and second name, people have got some chance of actually getting my first name. So I would go up to someone at a networking event and say, oh, hi, I'm Halina, Halina Jaroszewska, nice to meet you. And a question that I asked when I moved to York, because I didn't know anyone here, and I'd never been here before, was, what's your favourite cafe in York? And people would go, oh, because that's not what they would expect.
No, no.
And they would go, oh, do you mean my favourite cafe? And I'm going, yeah. Wait, you know, where is it? What is it? And then you can ask, why is it your favourite cafe? And I got some amazing answers and went, and then you've got the opportunity to say, oh, that's brilliant. How about we meet up and I'll buy you a cup of coffee? Then you can do your, so it's finding, it's using language to be able to create a really quick relationship. The person is just slightly taken aback at being asked a different question. And then you've got your follow on. Let's meet up.
And it's amazing. Something like that is really quite simple, isn't it? It's not a, you know, you're not asking a really complicated question of someone there. That, you know, I think one of the benefits of that, obviously, you get people talking about, like I said, something different. You know, they weren't expecting that. It makes you stand out and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
One thing I was thinking,
it makes you memorable. You have impact, and it also makes you visible. You stand out. And it's also being, then I'll stop because I get very excited about this. It's also listening maybe to the news. And there was something was happening financially. And there were a whole group of people. And I said, you know, I don't want to know about your business. What I'm fascinated about is, what is the impact that this is going to have, whatever it was? And that went off into a completely different conversation. And it got me to know these people much, much better and help me remember them.
Mm. Absolutely. I was thinking when you were talking then, how beneficial, and I'm going to say this, and I think anyone listening probably will, most people will probably cringe. So I apologize now, but a lot of us now will spend quite a bit of time on platforms like this, having meetings with people, whether it's Zoom or wherever. How useful of an exercise for us all to, you know, maybe record one or two of our conversations and watch it or listen back more accurately from a point of view is almost how we've said something rather than what we've said, if that makes sense, and kind of picking out on the things we've talked about earlier, using words like just or quiet and things like that. And, but also just everything that we're saying and what are we saying? It's never been easier, has it, to analyze that? And whilst
So on Zoom, I've been meeting people recently. I've gone, oh yeah, I recognize you, because seeing them from top to toe, you go, I'm not sure who you are. But when you go like that, you get. However, it's more complicated, I think, when we're on Zoom or Teams, because you only do have that square. Like today, I've blurred my background. I chose to do that because we're doing a podcast. I might not do it if I was on a different sort of platform. Yeah. However, I was working with... it was working with a client in the charity sector, a youngish chap. And I was looking at his background and he had his washing on a rack behind him. And I'm going, this is a bit mad. And we need to take into account every single message that we're sending out, because the lusciousness of language isn't just words. It's how we look, how we sound, how we speak. Not saying that we all need to do BBC English, but it's how we speak. Everything combines to make that language, and it tells people a lot about us. And again, another client, and background is really important. So some people get very excited because they've got moving backgrounds, which are actually very distracting. So I was working with a new client, and I couldn't actually distinguish this client from the background. And I thought, how am I going to talk about this? How am I going to? And the client at one point said, I think I'm an advocate for people in the company. And I went, oh, that's interesting. If you had a background that signified that, what would it be? She said, give me a moment. The background came back and I went, absolutely brilliant. That shows me that you're an advocate. I could then see the client. The client hadn't merged into the background. So there's the language isn't just the words that we speak. It isn't just the words that we write. And it's being careful when we like go with an email to not maybe send that email off immediately, to put it in draft and then do what I call green it. You put a nice bit at the beginning, you put a lovely bit at the end, and you check what you've written in the middle. Is it something that's going to come back and bite you on the bottom?
Because I think it's really interesting. You talk about context essentially there, right? And you know, using the example earlier of going to a business event, you probably might use slightly different words if the event is at lunchtime or it's on an evening, for example. Even though it might be the same group of people and even in the same venue, often it's just the context change. I thought it was really interesting there how you mentioned written communication, because obviously what we've spoken about generally here is spoken, but I think it's obviously one of the, weirdly enough, one of the kind of increases in technology, and the less we see each other in person now, more we communicate, whether it's via email or text or whatever it might be, social media. Written communication can be really difficult to get the right tone sometimes.
Yep.
I'm certainly not perfect at that. Is there any kind of things that maybe we should all be looking out for on that side of things?
Well, at the moment, there's an investigation into the whole COVID, how COVID was handled. And what are they looking at? They're looking at WhatsApp messages. We think that we can just send a text off or a WhatsApp message, and it just, we need to be aware that now those messages can be accessed. And especially if it's a business WhatsApp, you need to be really careful what you put on there, because words, again, I think, are never innocent, and because they can be interpreted in different ways. And it's always when you've written maybe an email, if you've been a bit cross about something, again, I would say, I reiterate, put it into draft, leave it, go back and read it even the next day, if possible. And so I've got a complicated email to send off in a moment, and I'm going to have to write it, leave it, and go back and then read it to make sure that I've put it in a way that opens up the information that I want rather than closing it down.
Well, this as well is, I remember reading about something about this a while ago now. Essentially why emojis became a thing is because we struggle to put, so an example would be, I'd say to anyone, try and write, whether an email or a post on social media, that's sarcastic, but do it without saying it's sarcastic or put an emoji on there or anything. It's, then you reread it and it sounds very literal. And it's really, really difficult. And that's why things like emojis have appeared, because you can put a little winky face or something like that on there, because then it gives everyone the context. But often, say, for example, emails, we wouldn't do that, would we? We might do it in a social media post, but we wouldn't do it on an email. Yeah. So you've got to be really careful. And I've been guilty of that myself.
The sense I have, and I'll put it out there for you to go no or yes, who knows, is that what we're talking about, in fact, is our brand. Everything that we say and do and be is our brand. And if we run a business, whether it's a corporate, a social enterprise, or a, you know, an entrepreneurial type business, whether it's in the, you know, public or private sector, it really doesn't matter. However, everything that you do is your brand. And I would say that we need to be on brand 24/7, 365.
100% agree with that, and probably best example, it's probably quite a crude and basic example, but let's say you went on a platform like LinkedIn and you look at maybe some posts from someone who's a legal professional or someone who is in financial services, it's often quite matter of fact. There's not much of opinion type things in there, whereas, you know, someone like myself doing what I do, it can often be a little bit more. Sometimes I will put a post out there that's in jest or a little bit, hopefully people see it as humorous as well, and a bit of thought provoking, and that's kind of what it is, isn't it? That's your brand. Written words is bringing out your personal brand.
Yeah, and it's remembering, what is the return on investment? We often talk about casually ROI and stuff, but what is the, and I've just used the word that I would like to ban as well. I'll tell you about that in a moment. What is the return on investment of every single word that we use? And what is the return on expectation? So I was at an event in the Guildhall a couple of weeks ago, and someone floated up to me and said, are you going to ask one of them? And I went, what do you mean? She said, you're going to ask one of those questions that you ask. And I went, probably. And that was really interesting, that now has become part of my brand. And in the outside world, whereas over the past, I don't know, 20 odd years that I've been working as a coach, fully trained, I must say, and fully accredited, is that's been my job.
Yeah, that makes sense. Go on, tell us your banned words then.
Oh, so you're in a meeting, or you're in a conversation, and you say something, blank, 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 and you stop. And someone goes, yeah, but. And that but, those three little letters, mean I don't agree with anything that you've said, because what comes after the but is what I think, and it's much better. The word to substitute is and. So you want to change the world, and I agree with you, and this would be a good way to do it.
Yeah, it's kind of a polite way of saying, no, I don't agree, isn't it, essentially?
Well, but is the way of saying I don't agree. Yeah. Now, the other thing, and client yesterday, a new client, so not quite used to having, and I could fine you several times for just and quite and things. She now knows not to use those words now. And a couple of times, and this is someone who's a director of a large not-for-profit, absolutely brilliant at her job, saying, I was rubbish at that, and left it at that. And I went, oh, that's interesting. Because we have these things here in our skulls called brains. And our brains are really dim. If you say, I'm rubbish at that, your brain whizzes off into the hard drive, goes through all the folders, goes through everything, all the documents, and then goes, okay, Michael, here's 983,000 million examples of when you've been absolutely rubbish. And you go, oh, I knew I was rubbish. However, if you say, I'm rubbish at this, and you add on at the moment, your brain goes, oh, it's okay. Michael's working on this. That's fine. And goes back to sleep.
Yeah.
Things like that to keep our thinking fluid and in play.
That makes a lot of sense. And there's so many things there I'm sure we all say, and I will have said it a number of times during this conversation. I don't know if I want to watch this back now and we'll worry about it. But I think it's like anything like this, isn't it? If you're not going to get right straight away, you're not going to completely change how you talk because you've done it for however many years, but it's slowly, surely starting to weed out the words that you and the ways and the phrases you shouldn't say, and don't expect to get it right overnight. And I think what you said earlier was spot on about branding. I know there's words I use that's come to me that I use in a Northern Affinity context, which are part of our brand, which are our key words. I mean, there's one over my right shoulder. You can see community in the background there is a word that I barely have used in the first 35 years of my life. But in the last 5 years or so, I've used about 20 times a day because it's the brand of the Northern Affinity, and I guess therefore me. It took me a while to kind of get used to that. I would use the word group before I use the word community for most of the last 35 years. And I find now I even use the word community when I should mean group, but that's another story. And it just takes time, I guess, is the message I would say to anyone to change those things.
Yeah. And the first minuscule step is to be conscious, to not let it be wallpaper.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, I sometimes describe words like, but and just and merely and only and all those sort of words, sometimes describe them as potholes that we find we're in them and think, how am I going to get out of that? Or I can't think how to describe this. I came up with a concept of butterfly nets, that sometimes someone says something to, we're thinking, maybe we're in a meeting or we're in a networking context or whatever, and you think, I really don't want to do this. I know this is coming up and I really don't want to do this. And this butterfly net just comes and scoops you up and you think, oh no, I didn't mean to volunteer for that. I didn't mean to agree with that. I didn't mean to say yes to that. And it's finding a way of how to extricate yourself from the butterfly net. And often it's being able to say in the moment, oh, I just need to think about that for a moment, if I may. I'm just going to go and get another drink, or I need to go to the loo, whatever. Take yourself out of the situation. In other words, it's doing the pause.
Yeah.
So that you can then go, is that what I really want to do? Did I really mean to say that? Did I actually agree with that? And then you can come back. So maybe at work, someone, or whether you're one person or more, someone says, this is, we're on a deadline. I really need this to be done and I need you to do it. You know, you're up to here with everything. How do you get out of it? And it's finding a way to say, I'd really love to help. Could you help me prioritize these 10 tasks that I've got that need to be done by? Can you help me prioritize that? That's one approach. Another one is to be able to say, I'd really love to help. I'm absolutely up to deadline at the moment. I know that X would really like to be involved in this. Maybe we could ask him or her.
Yeah, great advice. So much to think about with this, Helena. My mind's ticking already. Fascinating. Honestly, I find it a really fascinating subject area, and I'm going to be really conscious of what I'm saying more to the rest of today. I'm recording another podcast after this in about an hour's time. It's going to be, make sure I pause myself for quite a bit. But final question for me, if people want to find out a little bit more about you, what you're doing and contact you as well, where are the best places to go, to look, to get in contact?
Okay. So my website It's a great place. It's my name. So it's www.halinayarrowshevska.com. And on there, my logo is, it's a of four puzzle pieces, one being slotted in, and it says Be Halina'd, because lots of people that know me or clients say, have you been Halina'd yet? So that's really good. And the other bit on my website is, if you want a nice cozy conversation, this isn't the website to be on at all. And it links in with my LinkedIn, which is compassionately ruthless. I'm really upfront about that. So go to my website, explore what's there, see what you think. And there's some great stuff on Women at the Top, some brilliant interviews from Women at the Top reflecting on leadership. The other place, because I'm only on my website and LinkedIn, is follow me on LinkedIn. I've got really specific criteria for my contacts on LinkedIn. So I use it for a very specific purpose for clients that I'm potentially going to work with.
Brilliant. And what I'll do is I'll put all the links in the show notes as well. So if people do struggle with the spelling, especially of the surname, don't have to worry about that too much, because yeah. I'll put the links in there. So whether if you're watching this through YouTube, it'll be in the notes below and on the podcast in the show notes as well. And for whatever reason, if you can't find those, you know, give us a let us know at Northern Affinity and we'll point you in the right direction.
Yeah. And the other thing is I'm not into millions of emails. Drives me mad. Pick up the phone. So, and my mobile number is on the LinkedIn, so you can look there. And very last thing, the lusciousness of language is all about how we can influence ourselves as well as people that we want to influence out there. So use every single word as if it is a nugget of gold.
I cannot think of a better way to finish the podcast than that. And what a great way to finish it. So I just want to say thank you. Thank you for giving me loads to think about on a Friday. I'm not sure that's a good thing or what, but I think it probably is. So thank you for taking your time. And I'm sure a lot of people will get a lot of benefit from this.
Well, it's been brilliant. Thank you for inviting me.